This is the podcast for December 24th, 2010. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from Pia Zadora's Santa Prayer Warrior Workshop, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
And that is a Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. I know you want yes. people to just look it up, but that's what that is.
I grow ever more curmudgeonly as as the fake birthday of our Savior approaches.
Yeah. We're actually recording this on Frank Zappa's birthday, though.
Yes, we are. 70th birthday. Big 70. And approaching Mithras Mass, which is essentially what we'll be celebrating, the some blend of pagan ritual, Roman ritual, mm-hmm. and Christian ritual that had to find a place to hide.
Right, and it was just to keep the status quo in power. That's what they did.
That's all they did, man.
And that's kind of what we're going to talk about tonight after we...
Oddly perfect segue. Yeah, all those robes you see and all those big pointy hats and essentially all the celibate ritual was imported from the Romans.
Yeah.
It was all
just to make everybody happy. Yeah.
Like, Christianity was a hell of a sales job. I mean,
it really
they went
was,
all
yeah.
they went all over the world essentially painting over. Oh, you need a female aspect to your religion to buy it.
We got Mary over here. Yeah.
We got suddenly Mary. Mary is now elevated from some woman who gave birth in a manger to
Mother
Someone who ascended to heaven and was faultless. That was not the way it was originally.
No, exactly. They took all the pagan gods and said, oh, well, no, we're just going to replace these here with Mary and the apostles, and it'll be the same. I promise you. You won't even know. It's seamless.
essentially, it was Windows versus Mac. You know?
Now you're getting into sacrilege.
I know. They just filed off the serial numbers and said, it's just as good as the one you got now.
It's just as good as the one now, I'm telling you.
It'll run on the equipment you already have. Really? Yeah, we don't – shit, fuck, do whatever you want. We just want your taxes, and we want to be able to control foreign policy and your access to heaven.
You're going to have to do what we say some of the time,
Okay.
Okay. Cool.
And that brings us to the 21st century, doesn't it? Don't get whiplash traveling in time that fast.
Whoa.
Suddenly, it's the 21st century.
Yeah.
And
Haley Barbour is telling us that segregation wasn't all bad.
Uh-huh.
Some of it was good.
Yeah. Apparently,
like
George
the segregation part.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Really, they're just digging such a hole.
This is the problem of we've talked a lot about how Orwellian our world has become, but the sure sign that it hasn't completely sort of ascended into 1984 Orwellian hellishness is that people still have to keep their lives straight.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you had to actually be proud of Southern history, you'd have to be a pretty monstrous human being to be proud of Southern history as it was.
Yeah, right.
As it really fucking happened. And I'm talking about Southern history from, let's say, the beginning of time through, last month, I'm not talking about way long ago. I'm talking about our lifetimes. So, stuff that's happened into the 21st century. And you have to really lie to yourself a lot and invent a lot of bullshit and a lot of historical revisions and a lot of little leaps over whole decades of what actually happened to sort of make it through the day as a conservative.
Yep.
The problem you have is once you've internalized that completely revisionist bullshit nonsense, and then you go out into the real world and have to start talking about it, you sound like a moron.
Yep.
And this is an argument, I don't know about you, Blue Gal, but I've had this with very intelligent conservative colleagues of mine, very intelligent libertarian friend of mine, try to float this, the Democrats were the party of the Klan.
Oh, yeah. You get this on Twitter all the time.
And I'm like, yeah, I know that. And apparently you think I'm stupid because don't you know that I know? And you can sort of tell by the way this guy was looking at me that he knew he was lying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it was like, is he going to buy it?
Yeah.
Is he going to buy it? Because I know I'm a liar. And that tells me more about his internal sort of ethical structure.
Yeah.
That he's willing to float a lie that he knows is a lie. If he can just con me into going along with
this
bullshit.
If he can get away with it, then he wins the argument. And that's more important to the Limbaugh people, especially, is winning. Mm-hmm. It's all about getting those liberals and winning. It's not about being right at all. It's hilarious.
And as I said last time, you know, the hard driving I do sometimes listening to Rush Limbaugh, the number of times they say on the right wing radio, this will really stick it to the liberals. Yeah. This will drive those liberals crazy. It's just. It really, your whole life is defined by trying to piss me off.
Yep.
Really? You're giving me that kind of power over you?
Yeah.
Right, because you've got no ideas, no policy, no nothing. You've got nothing to say about America.
Well, this is exactly what segues into our topic tonight, because we got – first of all, we had fantastic emails this week.
Yeah. Bill Clinton comes around again.
Bill, get off the phone, Bill. Get off the extension, Bill.
Not all those Southern boys are hicks, let me tell you. I know my Bible and I can speak Greek. Mm-hmm. We're not, and that's the thing. See, actually, let me just segue to that just for a second. Because Bill Clinton is a product of the South.
Yeah.
It's not that there's a regional poison there. It's not that the people are inherent. It's that you have to.
Well, Jimmy Carter. And, you know, there are others, too.
And Jimmy Carter launched his career, if I remember correctly, launched his career. Hunter Thompson actually – this is
was there, yeah. He talked a lot about that meeting that he went to.
He was the guy who recorded, ran out to his car, got a tape recorder, and came in and recorded Jimmy Carter addressing – I think – I forget which state it was. Probably Georgia.
It was Georgia. He was in Georgia. He was addressing
– the Bar Association, right?
Yeah, the Bar Association, exactly, and saying, look, we've got to change. This is
– we were at fault. You know, we are a bunch of racist pricks, and we have to change. And he told them the sort of the unvarnished truth that you're never allowed to say in public. And he said it prominently to people who he knew
who had
could.
Power and money. Yes.
Yeah. And that was when Hunter Thompson said, you put his gin and tonic down and hauled ass back to a car and got his tape recorder and came back. Because that was the moment that this sort of radical Southern, you know, this other South.
Yeah.
The South, it is
the new
okay
South.
To be proud
what
of.
They call the New South. Yes. Yeah. Well, the new Southern politicians. Yeah.
People who acknowledge their past, embrace what's good about it.
And busted unions in order to make the economy grow. They were willing to suck up.
That's the problem.
They were willing to suck up on the racism business and say all the right things because racism is bad for business.
He said that before. It's bad for tourism.
And blue laws are bad for – there's two things. Blue laws and racism are bad for business. And the reason that you will have the major metropolitan areas in these southern cities don't have blue laws and every other community around them will not sell liquor on a Sunday. But you can't do that in Birmingham, Alabama because why? It's bad for tourism.
Bad for
tourism. So, and the conventions won't come if you can't have a drink on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. So, they'll compromise their principles for money.
and to double segue us, and I don't want to take us away from the central theme here, but that's how the concept of the round earth was sold to the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
He said, cleverly looping back to Catholicism. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, it's the right thing. It's factually correct. It's, this will make your trade routes more efficient.
Yeah, exactly.
If you agnostically, I don't care what you believe, but if you follow this methodology of doing navigation using a round earth model, you'll be able to get where you want to go faster and lose less ships
and
you'll make more money.
You'll make more money, yeah.
Oh, Catholic Church, understand money. We love money. Yeah, let's do that.
So convince your sailors to pray to Saint whoever and,
and
put the cross in front of the ship and then follow the map with the round world and you'll be all set.
Oh, so you
got
to make it.
But anyway, we got some great emails this week. I want to get back to the topic because we were going to make this a 25-minute podcast and fuck me, it's not going to be.
Okay.
Santa's helper is now pissed off.
I'm sorry, Santa's helper.
We got some great emails this week. We got emails from, as you put in the podcast notes, from Guam to Glasgow, literally.
Literally. From letters from around the world.
Around the world. And what's so funny is so many of them had the exact same question. And then I was like, this is really, when I got the third one, I was like, okay, this is, people really need some help here. And really the theme seems to be, this is all great and you're really giving me hope and answers and calmness and humor and all those kind of things that we all need to hear. But what do I do about my asshole conservative neighbor?
Yeah. There's that. There is that.
And so one reader from Pennsylvania really summed it up. He said, "My experience is that virtually everyone I associate with in my family or at work, young or old, rich or poor, or middle class, is light years to the right of my way of thinking. Even my kids are righties. And only one person I know that's near my age is even close to being a progressive liberal thinker. My own sister is 57, and she thinks Billow is too liberal." I don't even know how that's possible. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, once you move those goalposts to the Glenn Beck right.
Yeah, yeah.
Billow
the liberal.
He's the liberal. He's the reasonable center. Yeah. Just keep moving into crazy town, and eventually the suburbs look very comfortable.
Yeah. "My physician," he continues, "my physician thought the Obama tax cut cave was awful because the unemployed shouldn't get any support whatsoever. I know you have lots of emails to read, so I'll close by suggesting a topic you could do sometime. Is progressive thinking in our DNA, or what are the influences in our lives that make us libtards, as my sister is fond of calling me?"
Oh,
poor guy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't speak to each other anymore, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for writing. We really appreciate it. And I'll be your sister.
Sister by another mother.
Yeah, so, there you go. So do you think it's in our DNA to be liberal or just stubbornly factual or what? What is it that makes us this way?
I want to first preface that by saying that everyone here is a sinner.
Yeah.
Everyone here is screwed up. Everyone here. I'm saying me personally. I have screwed up. I've made mistakes. I've been wrong about issues. Mm-hmm. I've defended things far beyond the point where they were made any sense at all. I've been conned. Yeah, I've gone through the human carnival.
Mm-hmm.
I've made my share of mistakes. I have tons of scar tissue. So this is not to be interpreted as a sense of self-righteousness.
Right.
At all. But there is a certain kind of – it's not moral superiority in any way. Rather, it's just the opposite. It's – and I wrote about this in a post called The People of the Lie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a reference to an M. Scott Peck book that he wrote in the 70s or 80s, where he did case studies of people who had been consumed by some lie in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And it really got to the point where sort of turning back became unthinkable.
Yeah.
They got so committed. They went all in with something. They went way out on a limb. They told the family and the friends and the world, I believe this thing here.
Yeah, I joined a cult and I believe that Glenn Beck
and,
is God or whatever it is. Yeah, yeah.
And their family and their friends and their whatever told them they were wrong and they can't back out anymore.
Yep.
They're stuck. They're really stuck there, and they got no place to. Now that's not true. They can walk out of hell anytime.
Yeah.
You can walk out of hell anytime you want, but it takes a lot of courage to turn around and say, "I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong. I was wrong." And you know what? Even worse than that, liberals were right.
Yep.
The people I've been demonizing for 20 years actually were right, and I was wrong. And that is a sentence that conservatives cannot utter.
Yep.
Now, it's not a moral battlefield in the sense that they have to confront that question every day. They get to buffer themselves on all sides with people who tell them that they're right all the time.
Yep.
So, there are strains in my family. There are people, and I love my family dearly, but there are people in my family who remember the hardship and privation of the Depression and coming out of it and all of the social programs and good works of the government that helped, lift them out
Save
of poverty.
Their lives, yeah.
And I have other strains in my family who really do owe their wealth and their prosperity and their longevity and everything else to one government program after another, who simply deny that.
Yeah.
Because they want to believe of themselves that they are righteous or they're holy or God smiles upon them. They either have a libertarian bent that says, I am a rugged individualist who did this all by myself, or I'm favored by God. The reason I'm prosperous is because God loves me best. And they're very humble, or they're very righteous, or they're very sincere in their beliefs, but they have deliberately lobotomized themselves. They've cut out a part of their own history, their own memory, that scares the shit out of them because they can't afford to remember it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so like Haley Barbour, frankly, looping it back to him, he can't afford to acknowledge his past.
Yeah.
Because if he does, what happens then? What happens if Haley Barbour?
Who are you? Yeah.
If you woke up tomorrow and said, oh, crap, I have been on the wrong side of the central moral issue of my country for my entire life. Mm-hmm. Where do you go? And really, and there's a certain – did you see a movie, Blue Gal, called Thank You for Smoking?
Yes.
Isn't that a wonderful movie?
It's a great movie.
Yeah, and I believe that's Christopher Buckley, right?
It's Christopher Buckley. Yes, it is.
Bill Buckley's kid. And it's a very smart movie. It's probably actually one of the best movies about politics I've ever seen because it was all about winning the argument, not about being right.
No.
But about being clever.
Yep.
You know, linguistically
and
clever.
Winning uh-huh. winning even when you have the lowest lie on the planet. Mm-hmm. That cigarettes are not bad for you, and it kills people.
And you know it's
a
lie.
Your lie kills people.
And what But when you and they have those people sitting around the table, you know the whatever the other lobbyists are.
Yeah, they're the death squad. The arms dealer and the liquor lobbyist. Yeah,
and they admire the guy who does the smoking because he's the most.
He's the worst of the worst.
Job.
Yeah.
And he's the worst of the worst right up until the very end. But remember what the reason everybody who does these horrible things, the journalists who betray people.
They've got to pay their mortgage.
Exactly.
That's it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So right down to it, the bottom line is they need the fucking money.
Yep.
So from – if now go down the list of all the conservatives you know in the press, for example, who are very smart people. I don't doubt their intelligence at all. What if they had to – what if everybody from Bill Kristol to David Brooks had to admit – had a revelation. God came to them in their sleep. In their dreams, God showed up and said, you know, if you want to save your soul, you have to stand up tomorrow and admit you were wrong about everything and start over. Mm-hmm. They lose their house.
Yeah.
They lose their jobs. They would have – because all they are, their entire economic identity is defending this indefensibly awful movement. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they would have to go to the back of the line.
Yep.
And
I want to add something to that because you've mentioned the going so far that you can't come back again from the lie because
– Which is – well, and that's profoundly anti-Christian.
Exactly. Well, that's what I want to talk about is my daughter asked me, my 8-year-old this week, what is the difference between – we're looking at bumper stickers because I finally took off my Obama 08 bumper sticker off my car after, you know, he's now filing something with to make the Guantanamo prisoners have permanent status as enemy combatants or something like that. He's decided to file some official paperwork to make us able to detain them indefinitely. So
forever.
Mm-hmm. And it's clearly just to protect where the evidence came from against them, which is just wrong. And I didn't rip it off in a huff or anything, but it said 08 on it, and I just decided I'm not going to drive around supporting that, so I'm not. And I have the word Democrat on the back of my car, so my daughter was asking me the difference between a Democrat and a Republican, and I said to her, the difference is between fear and love.
Mm-hmm.
And Republicans seem to want to govern this country based on fear of zero-sum games where if somebody gets some right or some benefit or some, you know, money or anything that you don't already have or that you already have, mm-hmm. it's being taken away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fear of the outsider coming in and invading or it being, you know, the immigrants or the death panels or government takeover or whatever. That's just fear, fear, fear. And I'm not going to take the holy route of saying, you know, everything Democrats do is based on love because I've been around DLC people enough to know that's just bullshit.
No.
I like to think that there's less fear and more love on the Democratic side. At least from my own perspective, this is how you argue with a conservative, I think, is you have to go back to a lot of them are devout Bible worshiping, and I mean that in the idolatry sense, Christians,
yes.
Of, look, you know, the Bible does not say fear more and hate your neighbor.
No.
And yet that's the message that Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh teach. The opposite of that. And, you know, if you want to start going there and say, okay, who really is the Antichrist? Who's really going the opposite of this message of fear not, love your neighbor? The opposite is be very afraid and hate your neighbor.
And
once that's the opposite of the Christian message. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know, to continue with the Christian fish metaphor, the original metaphor, before they decided to make the cross, the assassination of Jesus, the holy image, it was the fish. Mm-hmm. And once the hook gets in, your neighbors are not like you.
Mm-hmm.
Others are your enemy.
Yeah, yeah.
And you need to be afraid all the time. Once you've sort of bought that, once you've taken a little sip off of that and start acting on that as if it were a basic law of nature rather than a sort of an ethical choice that you're making, you're sort of imposing your vision of human nature on the world and reacting to it, they got you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you will go as – the thing that astonishes me, and it really shouldn't because I know human nature enough as a writer to know – better. But, you know, every now and then I get another raft of emails from conservatives I know, or every now and then I sort of pop over to a bunch of conservative sites and check them out. And they've gone down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
What they believe, it's not like every seventh thing they believe is weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's like nothing they believe bears any relationship to reality anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're completely detached from any – and they will not let anything through the filter that isn't approved by Glenn Beck or the Wall Street Journal.
The extreme one of, you know, Barack Obama spent $200 million a day. He spent more than has been spent on the Iraq War per day.
Per day. Mm-hmm. It's true.
And it went around – the world of the conservative media that this was happening, and there are still people out there that believe that that's what happened, and it gets to the point where you shake your head and go, how do you argue against this?
Well, and that's getting back to our listener's question, which was the first part was, is it in our DNA? And the answer is probably a little bit, but I know people who are in the same as our reader is in the same family who come out very differently. It has to do with where you live, who you live around, who your peers are, your social, you know, the social group you're in. You know, if you're just sort of floating along in the current in a very conservative area, odds are you're going to end up with some very conservative people.
Yeah.
And you're going to end up nodding and going along with shit you would never go along with if you were in a different environment.
I also wonder how early on your politics is formed.
So based on what you just said, 8 years old. So,
well, and my six-year-old now marches around the kitchen laughing and saying, I'm a blogger, fight the power.
Which is adorable.
Which is adorable. Yeah. But
there's the answer to your question. So it's a little bit of nature, a little bit of nurture. But how do you deal with people who are that way? And I've given up on trying to sort of solve the problem of the lie.
Yeah.
Because you can't. It is an alcoholic syndrome. It is until they hit rock bottom, and they never will.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to stop because there's no reason for them to, because there's someone who's willing to feed them free booze forever.
Yeah.
You know,
and so
my only solution is you go after the containment device.
Mm-hmm.
It is only through, because the last refuge of a scoundrel is patriotism.
Yeah, well, see, and that's where I think. Go ahead.
And the last refuge of a wingnut is centrism.
Yes.
The last wingnut of the last refuge of every conservative I have ever debated. Mm-hmm. I said this last week. Once they get in the corner and they bare their teeth and they say,
both sides do it.
Liberals are just now. Okay, fine. That's the containment device. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that lets their lie survive. They pack into that centrist, both sides are equally wrong box, all the crap that comes spewing out of Glenn Beck's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is then, you can't combat the lie, but you can combat the containment device, because the containment element of this lie comes from people that you can recognize in the media and go after. Mm-hmm. You can go after David Gregory. You can go after David Brooks.
Yeah, and I also think there are two other windows right now in politics where you can get at these people if they want to bark talking points to you.
Mm-hmm.
One is unfair tax structure. If you can put it in a way that, look, taxes are just not fair if a billionaire spends a lower percentage of his tax of his income on taxes than his secretary does. Mm-hmm. If you can sort of simplify that message to where, you know, our tax structure is really unfair to everybody, I think that's one window. And another bigger window where it's much easier to simplify is sending jobs overseas.
Yeah,
that one is tax cuts for it.
That one's visceral. You really have to go out, because going after the other one is involves math.
It does involve math, and it's a little hard, and I understand that. But if you start, if you say, yeah, but you know, the government is paying people money to ship jobs overseas, and that's just pathetic, and it's got to stop. And the people that won't stop it are the Chamber of Commerce and the right wing.
You know,
your people.
Yeah. So there isn't a whole lot of there are no easy answers or we would be, you know, either we'd be really wealthy selling them to you.
Yes.
And this would not be a problem. There are no easy answers.
No.
But the solution and one thing I have employed to some marginal effect on specific issues is the question not going head to head. But when some bullshit lie comes out of the mouth, my question is, what if you're wrong?
Yeah.
You know, let's sort of clear the table of every other issue. Mm-hmm. You're not going to go for your gun. I'm not going to go for my knife. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll put the Bible aside. We won't, and you won't, at the end of this argument, you're not going to jump to, well, liberals do it too. Mm-hmm. You just said X. Mm-hmm. What if you're wrong?
Yeah.
And isolate the specific single issue and calmly and rationally walk them through. You know, because everything you say they're going to knock down. You know, the latest target of right-wing assault is Snopes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Snopes is, you know,
is debunking half of what they do all the time.
And so Snopes is just a couple of people in a trailer park. They're nothing. They're nothing at all. These people are clinging to their lies like, you know, like nuns cling to their rosaries.
Yeah.
And so you can't go after it in toto, but what you can do is ask them the question, what if you're wrong? What if I sit here for an hour and I prove you wrong or prove sufficiently far enough down the road that you might be wrong? What if it, is it possible that you're wrong? Is there any possibility at all that what you just said that has come from a single source that I can prove to you as a liar is wrong? What do you do then? Mm-hmm. And if they don't have an answer to that, just walk away, because what that means is they're completely gone. And you can just write them off as far as dealing with them politically. Hug them at holidays and treat them honorably and respectfully as a fellow citizen. But when it comes to politics, don't hesitate to say, you know, you're a fucking idiot. The problem with this country is you. You are the fucking problem. Because, you know, I have no problem I have no problem doing both of those. Respecting your right to exist as a citizen and as a compatriot or someone who's, you know, that I'm in touch with. But when it comes down to your politics, if you really want to push me there, I really don't have a problem pushing back. And maybe that's something we need to learn as liberals is, you know, once you've gotten to the point where that person is just going to be a thug about it.
Yep.
Throw a fucking elbow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't be afraid to throw a fucking elbow. Get right up in their face and say the problem and learn how to swear. I hate to break it, boys and girls, but you're really going to have to bust out the Malcolm Tucker from In the Thick of It and learn how to swear.
And if you're at church, that gets really hard, you know?
Well, no, Bible's full of swear words, but yeah.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com. Why don't you read the letter from Mrs. Ahmadinejad?
Okay.
I love the fact that she wants us to call her Mrs. Ahmadinejad.
Mrs. Ahmadinejad. Would you, Mrs. Ahmadinejad, I will try to read this because we have a letter from Scotland. And
yeah.
I will leave that to my Scottish compatriot here.
You can read that one too. Yes, you're Scott from Scotland.
Yeah, with my really, really bad Scottish accent that will offend everyone. Everyone across the pond. All right. Mrs. Ahmadinejad writes, could you do me a favor from now on? Whenever you refer to stupid fucking American people who worship money and have no fortitude, could you please use the following names? Glenn and Betty, the sheriff, Mark and Debbie, Tim, Jammy, Matt, and Janet, Belinda.
Don't forget Janet, by the way.
Janet. Don't forget Janet, damn it. Belinda, Hal, Tim, Al Smith, Janice, and Judd. So the answer to your question?
No.
No, we have no problem doing that. You left off, of course, Bob and Carol.
And Ted and Al.
But we'll throw them in, too. Okay. Shall we go on to the next letter?
Yeah. You go ahead. You're having fun with this.
All right.
This is from our listener in Scotland, and we thank him so much for writing.
From a listener in Scotland.
If it's not Scottish, it's crap.
Yeah, right? It's not Scottish, it's crap.
There you go.
All right, ready?
Mm-hmm.
You two make me laugh when you shred the fraudsters. The no label bit you all did really busted me up. Oh, and the Chris Matthews stroke mag bit so funny. The most liberating, cathartic moments I get is when I get a fit of giggling I can't contain. Bleak as things are, I am, by nature, not a despairing type. I don't kid myself either, so that I'm mostly in limbo land. I feel that there's this maddening logjam of mainstream chatter bereft of truth and sanity, which is constructed upon the acceptance of a rogues gallery of figures and sources. This crowd has the luxury of fantastical self-invention, when their most pressing concern should be to not, under any circumstances, pick up the soap.
That was very well done.
Thank you.
That was very well done. I'm going to read the next paragraph, not in a brogue.
I
that was really good.
Thank you. Well, you know, you just have to gargle with a little scotch and relax and let the old world come through.
Aye. Mostly people go along with it or tune out, but this bullshit, nonsense, lying illusion that we have going is not built to last. By its very nature, it is designed to preserve and maintain. It battles change and it battles history. And I would argue it loses. Mm-hmm. So let's be aware of that. He writes, he continues, it eventually gets overwhelmed by something it didn't quite see coming.
Always does.
WikiLeaks turned into OpenLeaks, turned into what next? My worry is that things will have to get really shitty before the fiction gets widely challenged. Meanwhile, I'm engaging where I can and growing my own food.
Yeah.
Good for him. Thanks for listening, and please keep up the humor. I am also happily pitching in a bit more in the hat, and we appreciate that so much. Thank you.
So people, we got money from a Scotsman. So if the rest of you tight-ass fuckers out there can't come through with five bob, we'll bite my shiny Irish ass.
We really appreciate it. It's true. I hadn't thought about that.
We do.
You know, the Scotsman never names his daughter Penny, so.
No.
She'll get pinched. Yes. No, that's really true, and we want to thank our listeners. But first of all, let's reply to our listener in Scotland.
Scotland?
The humor is not going to stop.
No.
Because that's a very sharp weapon in our quill.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? I mean, laughing at it, and you know, that's why
devil,
we read Mrs. Ahmadinejad.
The devil hates laughing, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why we read Mrs. Ahmadinejad's letter, too, is because, yeah, could you please, next time you talk about an asshole,
sure.
Call him Glenn and Betty? I mean, yeah, sure, the sheriff.
You betcha. You bet we can. Well, and there's a certain, there's an undercurrent to our Scottish listeners. I mean, we're kidding. We're getting mail now from literally all
Guam.
Over the face.
We heard from Guam this week, which was wonderful. Yes,
which is the point at which the sun sets on the American Empire.
Yeah.
The undercurrent to this is the interesting part, which is there's a certain ancientness to it,
mm-hmm.
a certain kind of, you know, when you throw in the word history in there, and sort of the inevitable change of things.
Yeah.
When you're living in a culture that goes back many, 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 many centuries, you can sort of look at what's happening with, I think, I hope I'm not projecting too much here, with a little bit more of a less frantic eye.
Mm-hmm.
And see,
yeah.
you know, I forget who said it. I'm sure I'm going to get this wrong. It sounds like a Dorothy Parker thing, but I'm sure it wasn't Dorothy Parker who said 100 years, all new people.
Yeah, yeah.
A century from now, everybody I know is going to be dead, including me.
Including you. Yeah, including us.
And the issues we have now will be gone and they'll be replaced by new ones. And that's, by the way, been going on for several hundred thousand years.
Yeah. And I think it's one of the things that's kind of depressing to me anyway, I don't know if you feel this way, Driftglass, is that time seems to be getting shorter and shorter every single minute. And I don't know whether it's because I'm getting older or because of the media that the issue that was around 2 weeks ago is now we've moved on to something else.
Yeah.
And
Well, that too will change.
Yeah.
You know, there frantic involvement, you know, is an artifact. Our brains are simply not big enough and capable of processing enough information for me to just handle all the crap that comes in through my email box from Adam Green Urgent and the Nation.
Right.
You know,
right.
Here's something else you need to be outraged about right now. Like, no.
You know, it's funny. We got an email this week from someone who wanted to pick my brain about news sources.
Yeah.
And I felt really snooty saying this to him, and I said, I feel like such a snot saying this to you, but I get my news from my email account because people send me stuff all day long, you know, and it's not just, you know, the Nation and Adam Green and all these other people, it's my colleagues, you know, oh, I'm writing about this, by the way, and I'm writing about this, and does somebody want to write about this? And so I'm hearing from people. You know, or this would make a good open thread, that kind of thing going on all day long. And so when you have 49 emails a day from people who are blogging alongside of you or with you, and you're sort of just in this world, you're going to be, as I said to this correspondent, you're going to be linked in at least to what liberal bloggers care about. And I realize how insular that is.
Yeah.
I totally realize it.
But there's also a sense, I forget what the definition comes from, of what a crisis actually is. And we really have lost all perspective of what a crisis is. Mm-hmm. A crisis, according to this definition from probably the 60s, I first read it in an article discussing the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Mm-hmm. A crisis is when you literally have no idea what's going to happen next.
Yep.
Not that one of three possible things might happen, one of which will piss you off and one of which will make you happy. Mm-hmm. But the world literally comes to a stop, but you have no idea whether or not time will proceed, you know, that's a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
The Cuban Missile Crisis was called that because it was a crisis. The Dream Act is a problem. It's a severe problem. It's a chronic problem. It's an embarrassment, but it's not a crisis because the passing of Don't Ask, Don't Tell was a wonderful thing, a historic thing, and a noble thing. And I give Barack Obama absolutely full credit and full marks for passing it. And to not pass it would have been a horrible embarrassment, but not a crisis. It would not have endangered the country would not have come to a stop, whether it was passed or not passed. That's the difference between a crisis and a problem. And dealing and just getting barraged with issues every day from all over about all the stuff you need to worry about, everything you need to give money to, everything you need to be frantic about is like pointillism. And at some point you need to sort of move your head back from the picture and start seeing, you know, instead of these little jots of color, what the whole scheme looks like. And I don't know about you, but this is simply a function of the size of, you know, my capacity in my head. I can't worry about 500 things.
Right, right.
I just can't do it. And so I have to figure out the five things or six things that I'm really going to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And then really focus on them and not give short shrift, not say that other crises all over the world or in my own country or in my own backyard aren't important because they are.
Right.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I simply can't run 500 miles an hour.
Right. Well, and if three of your concerns are getting three kids to school in the morning, or making sure you have time with your spouse or time with your job or – getting to work safely, or you know
absolutely.
when your car breaks down, you stop worrying about what Joe Scarborough has to say.
Yes, you
really do. And that's all right.
It
really is important, I think we both realize, to keep in perspective that you can't operate at the front lines all the time and allow politics to ruin your day. And we've had a tough month. I mean, everyone's celebrating this lame duck session, and I'm not celebrating it just yet. There's some good things that have happened, and there's some really fucking awful things that have come out of this. And I'm not happy about it. One of the things that's come out of it is this sense, as we said last week, about the dilettantism of the Senate, that, we can't work Christmas, you know. But you can pardon Casper Weinberger at Christmas, and it's no problem, and impeach Bill Clinton at Christmas, and all those things can happen, and that's fine, you know.
Yeah,
so,
when Lindsey Graham comes out and shows us his stigmata.
Oh, you just said Lindsey Graham comes out. Be careful what you say.
I'm sorry. When Lindsey Graham shows up on camera to show us his stigmata, you know, look how much I suffer. I had to miss lunch yesterday to read a 17-page thing I should have read a month ago.
Yeah.
And expects us to sort of, oh, my God, that is so unfair.
Yeah.
Really? You know, here's a thought. Why don't you try working three jobs?
Yeah.
Why don't you try not having any money at the holidays? Why don't you try worrying about whether or not you're going to have a roof over your head next month?
Yeah.
And then you'll sort of get into the mindset.
What happens if your 24-year-old who's living at home gets sick and doesn't have insurance?
What then? What do you do then? That's a crisis, Lindsay. That's a personal crisis. That's not a problem. That's not an inconvenience. That's a fucking crisis.
Yep.
So the disconnect, and this is where, you know, you can immerse yourself in as much detail as you feel comfortable with. And I recognize there's lots of levels. People who aren't as sort of deeply involved in politics as I am, I get it. People who've separated themselves completely from the political process, I have no pity for.
Yeah.
You know, who completely checked out and only bother to notice that their world is run by a handful of people in D.C. and Washington, or Washington and New York.
And skating with the stars is the most important thing that happened tonight. Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
Got no pity for you. Mm-hmm. But I get, you know, Calvin Trillin and his wife had a thing that he used to talk about where they would give themselves issues for Christmas.
I love that.
It's a wonderful. I give you Bosnia. You will never have to fucking worry about Bosnia again. I'll take care of that. I love that idea.
That's wonderful.
But multiply that across sort of the domain of liberalism.
Yeah.
Where I don't have to know everything about every fucking issue because there are people out there I trust who do know this stuff.
You know
that's,
what, I think, Drift
that's
Glass?
What I'm missing. Yeah.
I give you Julian Assange's penis.
Wow.
You can have it.
Thank you. I'll add it to my penis collection. Yeah. Speaking of the Catholic Church, I believe that's where we started.
We want to thank our listeners. We're so glad you're here, too.
We are
available on the web all the time, by the way. And if you need to catch up on your podcast listening, we have free archives with no download at our website, which is professionalleft.blogspot.com. At that address, professionalleft.blogspot.com, there is also an opportunity for you to drop $5 in the hat to support our non-Catholic ministry. I don't know what to call it. We talked a lot about religion, and we're not proselytizers, but we're trying to just kind of...
But I think it's safe to say we're both believers.
Yeah.
And it sort of informs the way I think. I don't know about you. Yeah, but it definitely inflects and informs. It really does set up the value system on which I build everything else.
Yeah.
So.
I actually do believe that atheists have the best spot in heaven when they get there. Like, just, you come in first and you go ahead of everybody else because you were smart and clever and good without needing a carrot or a stick.
Yeah,
You did it without the framework. Yeah. You managed to be good and smart and clever without needing any bullshit. You went and did it. And so you get to go first, and God wants you at the head table of the cocktail party. Here, what'll you have? And that's how I feel. That's how I picture it. I mean, I realize that's total,
that in a million ways, it sounds like exactly the same place. Yeah,
that's true. It really is. It all goes back to Douglas Adams, doesn't it?
Doesn't it always?
Everything always
does.
Winds mm-hmm. up being Douglas mm-hmm. Adams. We have an email address where if even if you're in Guam, you can reach us, and we love hearing from you from all four corners of the earth or closer to home. Our email address is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Do the Internet Kitties have anything to add to this podcast tonight?
The Internet Kitties want to say, problems. You think you have problems. Try having a brain the size of a planet.
This podcast is produced under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2010, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.